Hello, gentlemen, and welcome to episode 589 of the Drunk Dashers podcast. I am your host, as always. I'm Tyler, and joining me, we have the man, the myth, the legend himself, Sir Colonel Gables. What's up, buddy?
I'll tell you what, man, I am doing pretty good. I have finally gotten off of work for the week at another three-day weekend that's coming up, so that in and of itself is amazing. Other than that, just tying up the loose ends before the new year starts. So, obviously, talking about the whole game stuff, you know, that's just one of the things that I need to go forth and tie up as a big old bow. But other than that, though, it's almost the end of the football season. Like another couple weeks here, and then we'll be in the playoff times. Other than that, man, it just feels pretty good, though. How have you been?
Doing all right. You know, I am dealing with the cold, so I apologize for my voice there. If you can could tell in the opening there, it's not 100% back yet. It's been over a week now of just being sick, and it sucks. But it's nice having a 3-day weekend, but also like I got 3-day weekend to recover, but also it's like I really wanted this 3-day weekend to like enjoy it and not be sick. But yeah, anyways, I will do my best throughout the show tonight and the show we're going to do next week. Well, we're doing two shows tonight, but the show that the other show we'll post next week, I'll do my best to keep the sniffling and the coughing to a minimum. As somebody that, I don't know, probably spends 50 plus hours a week listening to podcasts at work, nothing's worse than people heavy breathing, coughing, and sneezing into a microphone. So I will do my best to keep that to a minimum. But I can't promise you, it won't happen at all. But, sorry, one second. I can only breathe through my mouth, so it's hard. Normally you breathe through the nose while you're talking. I can't do it right now. Give me a second here. Oh, okay. There we go. All right. Anyways, I really apologize. This is bad timing with Game of the Year. But anyways, this is, the Drunk Dasher podcast where every week Gables and I get together and talk about video games. We were off last week. We did a show last week, but we did two shows 2 weeks ago, so we put that one out last week, and then we had a nice little break for Christmas. That was nice. Both of us got to recover a little bit, and I'll spend time with the family. Got some cool shit as well, both of us did. But, so what's going on this time around is we are doing our Game of the Year for the best games that came out in 2023. We will take turns doing our top 10. I will do 10, then Gables do 10, so on and so forth. We don't know each other's list. We will do an honorable mentions. That'll be on part two. So this week will be 10 through 6. Next week will be honorable mentions and 5 through 1. But before we get on all that, I really appreciate it. If you're watching and listening, all that, you're able to deal with my voice. Appreciate it. Please like, follow, subscribe. If you're watching us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, where the fuck it's called now, Spotify, whatever podcast service you're on, just look us up, Drunk Nerds, Drunk Nerds. You'll find us. Same thing on YouTube. Please do the same thing. Like, follow, subscribe. We're really, really, really trying to push to get the YouTube channel going. So we just got over 200 subscribers this week, so awesome. That's pretty cool. Yeah, so we're getting closer to that 500. Because 500, we can start actually making a little bit of advertising bucks on this, so it'd be great. Two guys, we just do this for fun. It'd be great to maybe make a little bit of money doing this, because we make nothing doing this podcast.
Yeah.
But Gables, give me a second here to catch my breath. Where is it? Here it is. Yes. All right. So Gables, I thought it'd be fun that before we get into our top 10 list here.
Yeah.
If maybe you're just jumping in because, it's Game of the Year. I want to just hear people like doing that, jumping in. People I don't normally listen to. Just listen, hear other people's ideas. Sometimes you find some new people at the content creators or podcasters, whoever, that you like because of this. And I just screwed up everything on my screen. There we go. It's all screwed up here. Sorry, people. There we go. But, yeah, I thought it'd be kind of fun, you know, whether it's your first time or maybe, you've listened to us the whole way through or you've jumped in somewhere along the way. What are these guys like? I don't even know their taste. Well, this is what happens. I have our top 10 list. We've been doing this all the way back to 2013. I'm not going to go through all 10 games from each year, but I have our game of the year from each year from the last 10 years. That'll be fun to go through those each real fast with everybody. So starting off with Gables here, 2013, he had Pokemon X and Y. 2014, Mario Kart 8. 2015, Super Mario Maker. Starting to see a taste here. Breaking up a little bit here. 2016 with Uncharted 4. 2017, back on track. Mario Odyssey. 2018, Celeste. 2019, Fire Emblem Three Houses. 2020, Persona 5 Royale. 2021, Guardians of the Galaxy. 2022, Elden Ring. So those have been Gables' Game of the Year from the last 10 years. And then here's mine. 2013, Last of Us. 2014, South Park, Stick of Truth. 2015, Metal Gear Solid 5. 2016, Last Guardian. 2017, Horizon Zero Dawn. 2018, God of War. You're starting to see a trend here as well. 2019, Gears 5. 2020, Last of Us Part 2. 2021, Life is Strange, Two Colors. And then 2022, God of War, Ragnarok. And we've had other co-hosts join us along the way. So I have our overall winner. So what Gables and I do every year is, I almost forgot, Gables, my little black book here. Now with both phone numbers in it, all of our Game of the Year awards, I write down all of our numbers, everything, every year. So I keep track of it here, and I always have notes that I write every single year. I got to get that ready here. But what we do every year, what we're doing every year is that, so if something gets 10th on our list, they get 1 point. If it gets 10, or if it gets first on our list, it gets 10 points, so on and so forth, all the way down. So in 2013, our overall winner between everybody on the show, that was we had BioShock Infinite, because that was Gable's fifth game. That was my third, and that was Jake, who was with us from the beginning. Was a second game. In 2014, overall winner was Mario Kart 8. That was because it was on, Jake was there, but didn't make his list. But it was Gable's number one game, and it was my fifth game. 2015, Justin was on. Justin and Jake were with us those years. We had Super Mario Maker. That was Gable's number one game. That was Justin's number three and Jake's number two. 2016, Uncharted 4. That was Gable's had it one. Justin had it fourth. I had it third. 2017, Mario Odyssey. Gable's had it one. Justin had it two, and I had it three. So that was pretty crazy. It was all three of us have made top three. 2018, it was Celeste. That Gables had it one. Once again here, I had it two. Justin had it three. That's pretty funny. 2019, it was just, that's when it just started, but just Gables and I. Untitled Goose Game was our winner that year.
Yep.
Gables had it three. I had it two. 2020, Ghost of Tsushima. Gables had it two. I had it seventh. 2021, Guardians of the Galaxy. Gables had it one. I had it two. And then last year, Gables, do you remember the game from last year?
Do I remember the game from last year?
It was a Nintendo game from last year. I didn't remember this. I was like, really? I totally forgot this. It was just a year ago.
Oh my gosh. No, why actually space
Nintendo
that?
Is a Switch exclusive. Kirby and the Forgotten Lands.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
Gables that's
had
right.
It, Gables had it fourth. I had it third. So, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I always like doing that. Kind of gives you a better idea of like overall like how it scored on everybody's list. So, yeah, it's pretty funny there. So, anyways, yeah, so we're going to jump into our top 10 games. We're going to start with number 10 here. Like I said, we'll do 10 through 6 this week. Next week, we're going to record right after this, 5 through 1, but that'll be posted next week. Gables and I get an additional week off, the week of Christmas, and then usually the week after we do Game Awards is the only two times of the year we actually get actual week off from recording. So that'll be nice. Yeah, Gables, I'm going to have you start, buddy. Give me your number 10.
All right. So my number 10, and this number 10 is going to be a bit of a surprise to people, only because for a fact that back in the day, I did not play a lot of this game, but...
God damn it, I'm already pissed off.
But I did play plenty of it during this year, and that was Advance Wars 1 plus 2 Remake.
Oh, God. Okay, I'm all right. I'm not mad. All right. I apologize. Go ahead.
I kind of feel like what you were going to say next in terms of what game I think you were thinking.
Yeah.
But yeah. Advance Wars 1 plus 2 Remake. I mean, I had a lot of fun playing this game, especially when playing the original and the second, like bits of the second back on the Game Boy Advance. I really like the visual style and how everything else was like very much like condensed in terms of like the strategy stuff. I got into what I could. And basically for this game being on my number 10 slot and stuff, yeah, it just felt fun to play. It felt like it was very thorough in terms of like the amount of content that was presented and stuff. I never got around to actually finish it instead of its entirety. But at the same point, I played enough to where it was good enough to where I very much enjoy what I liked. It was definitely better than some other games that I did end up trying and playing this year. And even though it's not as strong as what probably other people would have started their lists with, I liked it only because it's a good fundamental, like solid game for my number 10. So yeah, Advance Wars 1 plus 2 Remake is my number 10.
All right. Well, very cool, Gables. My number 10 is a really great indie game that I've been really looking forward to. You know, just coming from it has a good pedigree behind it. Studio, a brand new studio, but came from a studio that I loved before. Cocoon is my number 10 game of the year. This is from the people like level designers and some of the lead people that worked on like Limbo and Inside, and was totally blown away. This was revealed last year at the Summer Game Fest for Xbox, coming to Game Pass day one back in, I want to say, September. But this was like one of the coolest like puzzle games. Like this one, there's been a lot of great puzzle games out there. I know. I've played a bunch of them. I love them. I'm a sucker for like the style of games that like Playdead makes. But this was the game that maybe broke my brain like no other in video gaming, and like never made me feel like so smart when I actually like when these moments clicked for me. And I was just sitting here. I remember when I beat the game, I was like, I remember talking about like, it's like when I remember like Miyamoto like explaining how they made the first level of Super Mario Brothers on NES, about how they basically had explained the game to you in like that one screen essentially in that first level. And it's like, oh, here's how we have the turtle come out. You could jump on it, and then, oh, you jump on the, you know, explain everything to you in like one screen. It's like games have gotten way more complicated, obviously, in the last, you know, 40 years of how we make them, what we can do in video games. And a game like this, this puzzle game that has so many different mechanics to it, so many, and it adds to it with zero dialogue. There's no button prompts, nothing. And the way it just, little sound cues, or just like the way that the thing, like the way the screen just kind of tilts, or even just like I don't even know, like just the way they do every little sudden thing they do of like to teach you all the crazy fucking shit that you can do in this game, and how it gets crazier and crazier as the game goes. And like so the game was like you play as this like little, I don't know, like bug looking dude, and like I have no idea what the fuck the story is going on. I have no idea what's happening. Like I said, there's no dialogue, there's no nothing, but like you have these orbs, you carry around the orbs, but the orbs actually have orbs, like there's a world inside these orbs, and then you can jump into these, and like you have to move, like progress through these areas by using these orbs to like basically put down, to like put on a lever to push to like an elevator, and then sometimes you gotta go to an orb to do something to then that will affect the other world you're going, and then like the game progresses where like, so each orb has different, like does different things. But then when you like, there's like a part in the game where like you realize you can take an orb inside the orb, but then eventually you get to the point where there's four orbs, and then you realize you can take that orb that you're carrying inside that orb. And I'm like, what? Like, it's just like it blew my mind time and time again, where I'm like, I'm like, first off, how do they think of this? Second off, how did they make it so I can figure that out? And like, it's like, it's so simplistic the way it's done, but it's so like brain breaking of like how you get there. And then one thing just so clutch, that chef's kiss, every game, a puzzle game especially, or if you're in a puzzle situation, should have this. This should be a requirement where if you get to an area, like you're in a small little section and you got to solve a puzzle, they will like close off the thing behind you, so you can't leave that area. So like, I don't know how many times, like I'm not the smartest puzzle guy in the world, I'll admit, but, and it probably takes me way longer to do things than most gamers out there. But like, there's nothing more frustrating of like, am I just maybe in the wrong area? And you start backtracking, and you're just wandering around this whole map, spending hours. Cause then I'm like, oh, and then you find out like, you know, like you wasted all this time going in different, like you were in the right spot. You missed this thing. But to have like, to like close that off, it's like, okay, I'm in the right section, I just need to figure it out. And it just like let you focus on the puzzle itself instead of just like, well, like you're kind of like half-assed like trying to figure it out, but also like, well, maybe I'm just in the wrong room, or maybe I missed something. And it's like, no, it's here, you have the tools in front of you, just figure it out. This game is brilliant. I love this goddamn game. If it's on Game Pass, if it's on everything, it's $20, buy it. It's like, you could probably beat it. It took me like 4.5 hours, but like you could probably beat it a lot faster if you're smart. Probably smarter than me. But yeah, brilliant goddamn game. Number 10, Cocoon. Gables, what's your number 9, my dude?
Okay, so my number 9 is AEW Fight Forever.
All right, okay.
Well, here's part of the reason why, is because when they went forth and tried to create this game, they tried to make it as sort of like an homage to like WWF No Mercy as close as possible. And while they didn't hit every single thing, like, outside the game, like, outside the gates of what their goals initially, what they wanted to do, the end result, though, was definitely a fun experience. I went through the career mode multiple times with a couple different wrestlers, including the creative mode, and also with my creative wrestler, and also with, like, say, a couple other wrestlers as well. And I really did like the experience. I really did like the way the game felt in terms of the gameplay. I had a fun time playing as, like, all the different wrestlers and stuff. Didn't care whether it was, like, with Kenny Omega or Eddie Kingston or Jon Moxley or Riho or whomever. I still felt like I was able to not only, you know, was able to become that wrestler in and of itself, but to execute their moves flawlessly or to discover, like, how, for certain aspects of certain matches, like, oh, okay, if I use this ladder match or something, I know it's kind of stiff, you know, the ladder, but in order to, like, I can damage a person or something by doing this, or, hey, if I'm in a hardcore match, if I keep digging, try to pull out weapons, eventually I'm going to get an electrified barbed wire bat or something out of there to use against, like, another opponent, you know? It was that type of fun creativity I did like about AEW Fight Forever. I did like some bit of the blurbs or stuff where when you're talking with different wrestlers inside the career mode and stuff, some other paths will unlock or this or that. But even though the online portion of it wasn't so strong, or even with, like, say, their whole Battle Royale sub of mode and stuff, that one really didn't hit too well for me. The main result of why it's, like, number 9 on my top 10 list is because I had a fun time playing, like, God, what was it, like, about a 40-plus hour experience just going through the career mode, going through different aspects of the matches. I unlocked every single, like, unlockable in terms of the storefront that they did have without having to spend actual money for shit, because they allow you to go forth and do that. But, yeah, man, I got the chance to just experiment with different, like, wrestling styles, and it was just kind of fun, like, to have certain matches to where I play as, like, maybe Malakai Black and stuff, and, like, end up doing his finisher, the end and stuff, just this little spin kick or something that he does, and, like,
oh, the back fist?
The back fist, and, like, yeah, whichever. But, yeah, man, it would have been higher on this list if, say, they would have put out some more decent updates to where it would have fixed a lot of the issues that I had, yeah, in terms of the single, yeah, players, like, just the wrestling stuff in general, like, say, the way you kick out of pins, or the, yes, way it just feels like you could instantly lose a match if, say, you maybe mess up a couple different times and timing your counters, or even, like, I haven't had a chance to experience, like, the new, like, Beat the Elite mode of what they had added in, but I have played it enough to where, hey, this is a fun experience. I may go back to it from time to time in order to play a few matches and stuff. But as the core of the experience is, it's still good enough to be a part of my Game of the Year list for 2023. And so that was my number 9.
All right. Well, very cool, Gables. Well, my number 9 is a remake.
Okay.
To one of the best games from the 2000s.
Okay.
EA Motive's Dead Space. Yes. I fucking scared people a little bit there. I was blown away by this game, Gables. You know, I love Dead Space. If you've listened to this podcast long enough, like, I have been pounding the table for survival horror games, and, like, there was a stretch there for a long time where they were few and far between, where I talked about, like Dead Space took up that mantle for Resident Evil, and, like, Silent Hill and all those kind of died off. And then, like, Evil Within was, like, the one thing, like, kind of raising the banner. And, like, I was, like, screaming from rooftops for people to play Evil Within 1 and 2. And just see, like, survival horror come back in a big way the last, you know, year or so has, absolutely, been awesome. You know, it was just funny. Like, I'm, like, in the way 2022 ended was, like, me, like, I wasn't trying to, like, scream that Callisto Protocol was, like, a great game, but I'm like, this game is better than people are saying about it. Like, this is a good game, and I still think it's a good game. But then I played Dead Space, I'm like, oh no, no. Dead Space is, no, this is survival horror. This is phenomenal. Like, it totally, like, reminded me, like, especially, like as a huge space nerd, you know, and on top of that, like I said, a survival horror fan. Dead Space is just like, man, this is, like, top tier shit. This is exactly what I wanted. I loved the way they just built upon it. Like, this, like, a way they grew upon everything is just better. Like the combat is better. The way you get around the Ishimura is so much better. Like the first game, like it was, you know, obviously it came out in 2008, so they didn't have as much to work with, but it was like you had a tram system you took and that took you to like each level. And this game, everything is connected. You could, this tram still there is like a fast travel thing, but like it's more like a Metroidvania where things are sectioned off, and as time goes, you get like higher tier, like to like get through doors like that were previously closed off to you, and then go back, and there's doors out. You know, you can go through this whole area, and without using that tram, it became one big ship actually, instead of just like a bunch of different like sections. And just getting around there, the combat is phenomenal. The sound design, oh my god, the sound design is brilliant in this game. It's so gross and gory and gooey. I loved it. This game, it was everything I wanted and more from a Dead Space. Like, I'm not like this huge, like I'm a Dead Space 3 defender in like the sense I've always said, like Dead Space 3 is an okay game, but it's a bad Dead Space game. There's definitely a lot of problems with the story. Don't get me wrong, but I've always been a huge fan of Dead Space, but I'm not like this, you don't fuck with this thing, even though I think it still probably holds up well to this day. But man, like the way, and there's the way they change like the story around. Like, it's not like the story never blew anybody away, but like actually having Isaac talk, in the first game, he didn't originally talk. It wasn't until 2 he talked, but actually having him talk back to people, like it makes more sense to him. Like everybody giving him like commands and shit, and he's just this silent protagonist, and he's like, all right, I'll go do it. But actually him, like now it's like he is like giving suggestions instead of like, you know, it's like the whole game, like the basically like, the game was like something breaks, Isaac go fix it. And this guy, it's actually like, it's just people telling him that was like the original game. Like, and this game is kind of still more of that, but also it's like, now it's Isaac suggesting these things, or like him like working, it's like, just kind of makes more sense narratively. But also the changes with like the story with him and his girlfriend, I think it's Elizabeth, I want to say her name is, I could be wrong.
Right.
But just like the adding more backstory to them, and like you, like one of the big things is like you start finding things along the way of like the issues they were having before they even went on the Ishimura, because, you know, he's going there to like fix the ship, but also more importantly find his girlfriend. But also like finding, you know, dealing with more of that, like expanding upon their problems and everything. And also like, you know, the whole point of the game is like the lore of that space is the religion that everybody to this marker, and like finding out like this is a brand new thing, this wasn't the original game, like the original trilogy at all, of like finding out like Isaac's parents were like really deep into this religion too, and like so it's like affects him in different ways. And like also just like explaining this religion to you at the beginning of the game, instead of like finding out it's like this weird cult like at the very fucking end. I if I remember correctly, that's how it went in the last game. But like, man, I think they did a really great job of like also all of like the pain points of the first game were, or in the, like the older games, like pain like at the time weren't great. Like the whole, there's that whole port and the original one where like you had to shoot down the asteroids from like the gunship, and like, no, this time you actually can go out there and shoot them down yourself. And then like the zero G parts actually a lot more fun, where like instead of like you just launching yourself from point to point, this one you actually are like in zero G, like you're floating around and you can like traverse around, and there's like actual stuff to it, like, and it changes as the parts of the game changes, like parts become zero G that weren't zero G before, and vice versa. And it actually made them fun and enjoyable. There's like a whole boss fight like that too in the zero G, but boss fights also fucking ruled. It's a stunner to me that this game is like, when I started putting this list together, man, I was like, there's no way Dead Space is number 9. Like, this game is just too good. And I was just like, it's just too good. But anyway, then I started putting the rest of this letter. It's like, goddamn, I can't make the argument, man. Like, it's so great of a year 2023. As we talk about, like, man, 2023 is one of the best games of best years ever. And it's like, putting this list together, and then what didn't make my list? It's like, oh yeah, no, it's hard to argue. But it's number 9, Dead Space. Gables, what about you?
Okay, so for number 8, this is more an expansion, more so than it is of actual like full-on game itself. This is a continuation from a game I played through last year, and it's going to be kind of a bit surprising for people, but yeah, the Teal Mask and the Indigo Disc for Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. I have it.
Destiny 2.
Oh, no. 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 I'll talk about that a little bit later. But not in this...
I was like, not in this.
Oh, I got you going there. But for... The Teal Mask and the Indigo Disc. Now, I talked on the show before in terms of my experience with the Teal Mask, where I did not really feel too, like, I didn't really feel too great about it overall and stuff, to where I thought it was, like, maybe, like, a 6 or a 7, and that's because of, the certain characters I didn't like, but the best parts about that DLC was pretty much, like, some of the end battles of it, near the end of that expansion, to where you face off against the legendary, like, the Loyal 3 legendary Pokemon on top of Ogerpon and his different types of battles, the different types of battle modes depending upon what mask he was wearing. So I literally had to beat him like about three separate, about 3 or 4 separate times and stuff, just with all these different masks. But what really put it over the line and what put it on the Game of the Year was going through the Indigo Disc. The Indigo Disc has 4 different distinct areas of this dome. So it's, you kind of like think of it sort of like a biodome of sort.
The weasel.
Well, we're kind of laughing about this because we're kind of like talking a little bit about Pauly Shore things before coming up in recording, but it's exactly kind of what it is. It's a giant dome that's like right on the middle of like an ocean, like right in the middle of the ocean and stuff like that in like the Paldea region. And the thing about this is where Blueberry Academy is at, right? And so this dome has like 4 separate areas. And each area has a different part of the Blueberry's Elite Four, right? And so you have this giant areas, these sections and stuff, to where one's based like an ice-related thing, one's more of like an outback sort of thing, one's more like a canyon-esque sort of thing, and then the last one's more of like oceanic and stuff. So you have these different, like, the Blueberry's Elite Four doing this and doing that. But, I'll tell you what, though. Yeah, there are some little graphical glitches. I mean, come on. So Scarlet and Violet, Nintendo didn't really do too much in terms of improving the patch of like the performance of this game, especially with the DLC stuff. But the concept of the blue of the Indigo Disc, mind you, and stuff was pretty fun to go through, and it was mostly because I kept finding different Pokemon that I really like that weren't there before. Like in previous DLCs or in the main game and stuff, I was able to catch that. But on top of that, going through the battles with the Elite Four, the Blueberry League and stuff, was pretty fun, pretty interesting. There's like one character that is like the grandson of a gym leader inside of all the way back in Pokemon Black and White. Because here's the thing, Blueberry Academy is technically inside the Unova region from Generation 5, meaning there's a bunch of like nods to Pokemon Black and White, from like the battle theme when you get into like a wild battle or something, or if you're battling a trainer, it's that theme from Pokemon Black and White and stuff. So there's a heavy emphasis upon like the Unova region from the DS games. But oh my god, dude, there was like a couple different Pokemon that he used. He was most notoriously to me like one of the hardest battles inside of this DLC, because here's the thing. Going into this DLC, it doesn't tell you this, but all of the battles are like double battles. So it's 2v2. And so I took my team that I had and I went to the Indigo Disc. I got up to him and basically there was a restraint to where I had to construct an entirely new team because I had to use the Pokemon that I caught at the dome. And so, I liked that because it forced me to use a different type of trial, a different type of, like, team chemistry than what I had done playing through the entirety of Scarlet and Violet. So that way, I'm not just using the same, like, team in order to steamroll him going all the way through this expansion and stuff. So, I did end up constructing a team. I did end up constructing an even better team than what I initially did my first playthrough with Scarlet. But, oh my gosh, the couple of new Pokemon that introduced inside this Indigo Disc that he was using, you had the evolution of a Sword and Shield Pokemon called, like, Duraludon, right? His evolution is Archaludon, and it's basically a dragon bridge. He's basically a giant, like, bridge. But, remember the Pokemon that I talked about when I was playing through, like, Sword and Shield called, Applin and stuff that would evolve into one of different types of Pokemon, like, say,
yeah, Appleton. It's like the lizard with the apple on his head or something.
Yeah, it's a little dragon that's inside the apple, right? Like, he evolved in, like, the Applin and, like, Frapple and stuff like that. Well, there's a couple of different evolutions that he has in this game, too. One is called Diplin, which he uses, like, a different
Fuck's
type of
sakes.
Apple and stuff. And one is, like, Hydrapple. It is a eight-headed serpent inside of this freaking apple, right? It's a Hydra, but a freaking apple. And it looks so freaking crazy, because you have one giant serpent that peers its head out of there, and you have, like, seven smaller ones that are coming out of here. And it's fucking overpowered as shit! Oh my gosh. But, dude, going through that initial thing, and not only finding out that that Pokemon pretty much exists, that type of evolution for Applin, but yet, going through every bit of the Elite Four, the Blueberry League's Elite Four, and then on top of that, having to do the story thing for the legendary Pokemon. God bless, dude. That was pretty crazy in of itself. Oh yeah, and then finding out that the leader, like the champion, is the kid that you were beating the shit out of inside of the teal mask. His name's Kyren, and he is totally pulled like a 180 in terms of like the whole story aspect. Like, he was, like, kind of timid to meek and stuff, and now he's, like, an overpompous, like, ass and stuff. You know, he treats people bad and stuff, and he's constructed a super powerful team because his sole thing is to, like, just try to beat you. And then when you finally actually go through and beat him, I mean, he was easier than, like, say, some of the members of the Elite Four. But part of the reasoning why this is number 8 on my Game of the Year list and stuff is the whole thing of this expansion as a whole, how they went through and explained the whole crystallization and stuff, like the trastalizing thing inside the Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. It's pretty much based upon like this sort of like this one legendary Pokemon and stuff. Oh man, I forgot the name of the Pokemon now, but it's like, it's basically, it has all the different types and stuff, so it's sort of like a rainbow sort of like type.
Ditto.
Yeah, sort of like, not like Ditto, but like something entirely different, to where there's no like readily like strengths or weaknesses in terms of what type it uses, unless it's just so complicated in something for me to explain about it. But I love the revelations in terms of what you would find out, how the story would progress, or how you pretty much go against this like legendary Pokemon and stuff, to where it's like your rival going into this expansion was throwing like a freaking Master Ball, right? Catches the legendary Pokemon, but yet it freaking breaks the Master Ball because he tried to literally force him in order to try to like beat him or something like that. But oh my gosh, though, it was definitely better than what I thought it was going to be. And quite honestly, it's part of the reason why that this actually did make it on the top 10. But yeah, the Indigo Disc totally redeemed like the actual full-on expansion for Scarlet and Violet. It was enjoyable, so that was number 8.
All right, well, very cool. My number 8 is one of the most fun games I played of 2023, Gables. A game that I never thought I would get into. That is Wolong Fallen Dynasty. Absolutely adore this goddamn game. You know, sometimes gaming, just finding a game that you love, is all about timing. And it's like, this also came out at a great time on Game Pass, best deal in gaming. Coming out perfect time, not a lot playing it. This came out like, they had like that demo that came out at the end of February. This dropped like beginning of March, and put that demo out. Hey, everything you do goes over to the main game. I'm like, fuck it, I'll jump. You know, I have nothing going on, I'll check it out. Put like 6 hours in this demo. I beat it multiple times. Like, I got to the point, I got so over leveled. Because I kept playing this demo that I went to the game like crazy over the top, like leveled through the whole game. But like, I just loved it because like, I am not a Souls-like person. I've never beat one before. I just like the FromSoft games, like typically like the Dark Souls and Bloodborne, I don't really care for that. Like, that's the visual style. Elden Ring, it did not click for me. Like, I don't enjoy usually like just the running your head into a wall type thing. That's just not for me. Like, not saying that's bad, it's just, I don't like it. You know, I don't, I just, I get frustrated easily, And it just sucks when you spent 3 hours or something and then you've made zero progress. Like, that's just, yeah, that sucks. This just, I don't know what I think. Part of what I think it is too is like those other, like, FromSoft games are usually a lot slower. And this one, I just love, it's so fucking fast. I just love how fast the combat is. I was three collectibles away from 100%ing this game. That's how much I love this game. Wow. I beat every side mission. I found every, like, the bonfires, the type of essentially what they're called, in every single level. I would have 100%ed it, but they don't tell you which levels, like, you found the collectibles in or not. So I'm like,
oh God,
basically I don't want to replay through like 26 levels to find the three that I'm missing. But, maybe they fix that. I have to go back and check it out. Actually, I definitely will. But man, I had so much fun just like playing this game and just like, grinding out. I love the morale system and the stamina system. Like, the morale system, like, it works in unison with your levels and everything like that. Like, the higher your morale, like, the more, like, you fight guys, like, hey, there's a level we recommend you have, but the also morale system that goes up to level 25, like, the more people you defeat, like, the more your morale system goes up. But if you take a big shot, it'll go down. Like, if you lose to an enemy, theirs goes up, so it makes them harder. So, like, I just love that, the morale system. The stamina system, like, almost like, it's almost like a, kind of like a push and pull where, like, it could turn on a dime, like, depending on how much attacking you're doing, parrying, blocking, dodging, all that. Like, I loved it. Like, I found it just a great way that worked for me in this, where, like, I'm not great at parrying or dodging, but I feel like by the end of the game, I'd say, like, halfway through, I felt like I was competent enough,
right,
to, like, I got by. But, like, really what it was for me was, like, I just got so over-leveled that it really helped me out, where there's a quote from Creed 2 that a Rocky says to Creed, whereas he's like, if you want to take a beating, or if you want to give a beating, you got to be willing to take a beating. And that was my mindset for this whole fucking game, where I've never been, like, I hate games where you spend a lot of time in the menus. Like, that was my biggest complaint about Horizon Forbidden West from last year, was, like, I just spent so much time in the fucking menus. And it's like, a lot of life for this game. It was like, even though I like the game, I just really don't want to spend fucking 2 hours looking at, like, all right, well, this goes up by 0.6%, so maybe this is better. I hate that shit. But I into it, excuse me, big time. And this one where I was, sorry, I was min-maxing the fuck out of shit. I've never done that before. I don't like doing that shit. But, like, going in and, like, getting all of my, adding to, like, you can actually change, like, the, like, bonuses and, like, power-ups you can add to each individual suits, and, like, you can, like, level them up so you can put more things on those, and each individual more power-ups and bonuses. So, like, every single one was related to defense, raising my defense, my health, and then also raising my chi, which chi is, like, the souls in the game. So, like,
yes,
by the, like, I have, like, plus, like, 100% on defense and health, and, like, an extra 60% on chi. So, like, every, like, I was taking a lot of hits, but also I was like, I also focus a lot on my power. So I was beating the shit out of people, but I was able to take a lot of hits because my defense and my health was high. And also when I defeated enemies, my chi, I got way more fucking souls from people from defeating them. So I was leveling like fucking crazy. So like, I just found the system that worked for me, that really helped me power through a lot of these, like, those boss fights fucking hard as hell. I will say, like, that was my one complaint though, was like, there was, like, I went through, like, 7 or 8 boss fights at the beginning of the game. But that first boss fight was, like, probably the second hardest fight of the entire game, the first one. And it's, like, why would you do this? Like, why would you, like, are you trying to make people not play your game? But, like, the next, like, 7 or 8 after that, I beat them all without dying. And then, like, there'd be, like, one, I got my shit kicked in for, like, 2 hours against this guy. I finally beat him. But, like, that was just the way it was. And, like, everybody I was hearing from was the second to last boss was, like, was way harder than the first boss. I'm like, fuck, this is going to suck. And first try, I beat him. And it was like, so it was just so weird, like, the way things worked out. But, like, this is, like, easily my podcast game of the year as well. Like, I'm someone that loves, like, listen to some, like, especially as, like these type of games where, like, I have no idea. Like, I'm a huge story gamer. Couldn't fucking tell you anything about what was going on in this story. Couldn't tell you the character, any of the characters' names. I didn't give a fuck. I had a great time. I burned through so many podcasts. Just playing through this game, grinding and all that. I remember at the end, I was over 40 levels higher than the suggested mount for the last level. That's how much I ended up loving this game and just got into it. I put like 40 hours into this game. It was my third most played game of the year, not including Madden. So that should tell you how much I love that game. But yeah, My number eight is Wolong Fallen Dynasty. Gables, what is your number seven?
Okay. So my number seven is a game I played a good chunk of an amount this year. I have F-Zero 99 as my number seven game of the year.
I thought this was your goatee. I'm not... Okay. Wow. All right. What the fuck's going on after this, Gables?
Well, who knows? Besides myself. Yeah. But... F-Zero 99, let me tell you something, man. It's like, this was one of the reasons why I played a lot on Switch Online this year. And it's because I kept going back to this game, playing the one more match type of mentality. I used no other vehicle besides the Blue Falcon. I played through over 200 some odd races. I've gotten all the way past like S+ in terms of like ranking inside of this game. The feel you get when you're battling against 98 other racers in order to try to cross the finish line is an exhilarating experience. It is unlike any other type of racing game that I have personally played that has that sort of competitive aspect. I mean, you've played certain racing games online before where it's like, okay, you know, you have like about 12 other drivers and stuff. You got to go through, like, say, like in a like a simulation game, let's say like a Gran Turismo or like, well, hell, sometimes Forza has its own, like, sort of sim type of style in terms of, like, driving racing stuff. Or if you're more so of, like, say, the action sort of car stuff, like Burnout Paradise, doing this and doing that and stuff. With F-Zero 99, it takes a classic game that I loved playing on the Super Nintendo and stuff, and it evolves it to where it feels like a modern side of game, to where it feels familiar because you're used to playing the tracks, you're used to like using the certain drivers and stuff, but it's different because you have so much other resources for, like, say, like battling against like other people online, whether or not it be like a team battle, whether or not you're competing against cups to try to do your best and stuff. And I took first place on like a couple of different tracks. And throughout my entire experience, I have gotten first place a couple different times, but it's so rare to get that type of like first place victory in general. But I know I've done it once, the first time on like one track. I got incredibly lucky and I got onto like one like track or something, the Queen Circuit, and literally the first race I got, because no other person had gotten adjusted to the track, but I had been adjusted to it because I used to play it almost to ad nauseum on like the Super Nintendo version of F-Zero, and I literally get first place the first time I try it. But we have moments like that to where you would be down and out, you know? You'd be like maybe like in the 30th position or something. You want to get up to like the top 10, and then all of a sudden you find that boost just right and stuff to where you get to skip across other drivers or skip across an entire section of the track. Then all of a sudden, you come face-to-face like with the top three, and then all of a sudden you battle your way into, like, say, a second-place finish or, like, a first-place finish or, you know, you finally are able to take out a driver or two. Like, they explode. You gain, the whole boost experience from them in order to win a race because of, like, so on and so forth. Or you unlock a different set of colors for your favorite vehicle because you're able to meet certain conditions and stuff. This game... even though I know that this game is going to be disappearing probably in the next 5 years or something off the Nintendo Switch Online because of how...
6 months.
Or 6 months. You never know. Because of how... oh, God. Haphazard Nintendo is in terms of putting out some of their online structure games on the Nintendo Switch Online. If this hasn't proven yet that we need another F-Zero game, I don't know what will... because this was definitely one of the best experiences I've played in terms of F-Zero, but also in terms of, like, a good experience playing on Nintendo Switch Online in general. There have been other games that have released for this system that have terrible online components because of how terrible the matchmaking system is, or how the quality in terms of lag, or whatsoever. Smash Ultimate is one. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe can be better, but at the same time, it's inconsistent at best. Splatoon 2 and Splatoon 3, they have their hiccups in terms of their online stuff. But yet, there's all sorts of various types of, like, cheaters that are prevalent on that damn online thing as well. And hell, I've had friends or something like that are playing Switch 3 or something like that have like over 2,000 hours on that shit. You know, that's their game that they want to go through and do. But for me, this year, one of my favorite games to play on Nintendo Switch Online was F-Zero 99. And that is my number 7.
Nice. I'm stunned. That's number 7. I don't know what 61 is going to be now. Holy shit. Okay. Well, my number 7, Gables, is a game that, man, 6 hours in, Gables, I'm like, this might be game of the year.
Yeah.
And took some tumbles on the way to get to number 7. Alan Wake 2. I love Remedy. I have been a Remedy fan. I'm not like an OG, like Max Payne guy, but dating back to like Alan Wake, love the original one. I have always been a staunch defender of Quantum Break. Control was fucking awesome. Just didn't run well at launch. And Alan Wake 2 was like, this is like the amalgamation of everything we've always wanted from Remedy. And man, I feel like they do such a great job of like hitting on so many things. Like, and I'm so happy. Like, this is like finally like their game that like brings them to the forefront of the gaming industry, where like, I feel like there's so many people out there, and there's people that love them way more than I ever will, or and way longer than I ever will. But man, like, I'm so happy that this is like they're finally having their moment this year, especially with the Game Awards, with the Wii Sing thing, which, man, what the, that was. I'm so like, I'm happy so many people got to see that, and that brought a lot of eyeballs to that thing. But I'm also like, there's so many people out there are going to play that game because of that, and don't get the moment, don't get to feel what I felt when I got to that moment. I'm like, what is happening? It fucking ruled. Chapter 4 of Alan Wake, that's all I'm going to say. Just check it out. If you don't know what I'm talking about, good for you. Just buy this fucking game. It's fucking brilliant.
Was like one of those moments and stuff to where like we were watching the Game Awards or something like that, and like people from our Discord chat was like, what the fuck is this? Or what the hell is
yeah,
this?
Yeah. Well, like, man,
you and Cam got it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, we're just trying to explain it. It's like, dude, like, if like, you have no idea how much Cam and I are like marking out right now to this. And then everybody's like, what? It's just so funny. It's like, yeah, everybody's like freaking out. Like, yeah, there's like, it's like everybody, either you're marking out or you're confused as hell. There's no in between. But yeah, I was just blown away. I'm so happy Remedy exists. This is like Remedy going full Remedy, in this thing where, and I love the fact that they basically just took the Resident Evil 2 gameplay and also like the menu system, like, it is almost like blatant ripoff, and I'm cool with that. I love it. Hey, if it works, go with it. And it's like they do such a great job with that, and like the big complaint about Alan Wake was like the gameplay was just not great. And their engine, I think it's Northlight engine, gorgeous. My God, the way things look in this thing is fucking beautiful. But I really, really, really dug Saga Anderson's storyline. He plays the two characters, Alan Wake, Saga Anderson. Really loved hers. And I really liked Alan Wake's as well. Not as much, but I think I enjoyed the gameplay parts more of Alan's, but I enjoyed Saga's story way more. But it's just kind of like, as the game progressed, this is kind of the negatives. Like I said, I love the combat. I love the boss fights, love some of the stuff that happened, but like, I feel like some of the ways the story is kind of connected together. I don't know. Just like, when I'm listening to people like freak out about some shit, I'm like, sometimes I just feel like it's like, it goes crazy places, but sometimes I'm like, I don't know if it's good. It just goes crazy. It's kind of the way I felt. Like, I was like, something I'm like, I feel like this sometimes like it's a little too, I don't know what the word I want to look for. Like, just a little too out there, maybe. Like, even though I loved it, and like, I still enjoy it, and I'm gonna go where Remedy wants to take me. I didn't think it was bad. I just didn't love it in the same way I think a lot of other people did. But like, man, that first like 6 hours, I was like, fuck, man, this is probably my game of the year. But yeah, like, and like some other thing, I hope they like the map. Give me a goddamn mini map next time. I waste so much goddamn time constantly pulling up the map. Like, where the fuck am I? Okay, turn around. Pull like, okay, where the fuck, like every like 30 seconds, like, all right, where the fuck am I at? I wasted like a good hour and a half at that fucking map. But anyways, but the thing is, like, even after all these like things, I want to play more of it. Probably my biggest thing to me is that really prevented me from playing more of it. Like, doing a lot of this, there's so many like side activities I want to do, like finding like the coolers with more, they had like notes in there explain more backstory and gave you items as well. Or there's like, I don't actually want to say the other thing, but, a little bit of a spoiler, I guess, but there's so many other cool things I wanted to like do. side activity wise, but like, you know, this is a survival horror game. It's built upon, you know, like you're going to have items and stuff like that are limited. And in some cases, like you can go through a bullet real, like a couple fights, and you can go from like having flush with bullets to I'm struggling here. And what sucked was like trying to do side activities, wandering around, trying to do more, mainly in Saga's part, because like she has a more of an open area, is that like enemies respawn. And so it just like sucked. Like also like I'm just trying to backtrack. I'm just like, trying to explore and find shit. And it's like, you know, like, or like I see something on a map that's there. I'm going to go do that thing. And then it's like, oh, well now I'm getting attacked by three guys. All of a sudden I go from like, cool. Like I went from having a bunch of items or like, oh, cool. I found this cooler with some items in it, but I wasted way more on this fight for these items than what I would have had, you know? So like that kind of like dampened my experience on that. It's like, I just want to play more of you. But like, I don't want to like, and like the combat's good, but it's like, we got to work some shit out here where it's like, yeah, it's like, make it like, don't make it feel like a penalty for fucking, you know, playing more of your game. But yeah, anyways, I adore this game. Like those are small nitpicks, but like in a year as good as 2023 is, little nitpicks like that, it's going to drop you from, you know, can drop you 5-6 spots. So yeah, that was my number 7. Gables, what is your number 6?
Okay, number 6. Resident Evil 4 Remake.
Okay.
The reason why Resident Evil 4 Remake is on my top 10 list. That game's fucking fantastic. Absolutely is fucking fantastic. I spent a lot of good time, like, playing initially when it did came out. I did, like, play a little bit of it back, like, when it first came out and stuff, like, about an hour, hour and a half. I spent a good chunk of hours, though, playing through more of it on Extra Life. Had a chance to enjoy, like, bits of that opening sequence and also bits of, like, the middle portion of the game. I loved the gameplay of it. Definitely loved, like, the weapon play and stuff. The merchant, obviously. The whole shooting gallery and all the other shit and stuff. But yet, it felt fairly like a survival horror game more than an action game. Kind of like how with the original Resident Evil 4, like it did back in the day. You know, to where it felt more like a action game because of how the set pieces and the different things were kind of like ran to and from and stuff. But with Resident Evil 4 Remake, it felt like Capcom did a fantastic job not just remaking this game, but also feels like it's better than the original game itself, which that is a hard fucking task to do. Especially for how beloved the Resident Evil 4, like, how Resident Evil 4 was when it first released and all the subsequent re-releases of the ports for years afterwards. But, game looks, I mean, it looks freaking beautiful. So atmospheric in terms of the designs, in terms of the villagers and stuff, how the parasites just like, sickeningly just spew out of, like, freaking villagers' heads and stuff like that, and then you have these like monstrosities just whipping around and do this other shit. Oh my gosh. And the characters like, say, Luis and stuff, you get a chance to meet, plus the interaction stuff you have with Ashley and stuff, just little subtle things. But oh my gosh, I just remember like certain experiences and stuff, like say saving the wolf and stuff from like the trap and stuff, and then coming to help you out later, you know, like a foreshadowing, say, hey, help this animal, and it'll help you back, you know? Like, I wish more games would do that, you know, to where it's like, oh, hey, don't be a dick. Help the animal.
Gables, I have a lot of narrative-driven indie games I'd like to show you after this podcast.
Oh, my God. Okay. Oh, I just went down a rabbit hole. Anyway.
You're speaking my language.
Oh, yes. When it comes to this year in gaming, I mean, you hit the nail on the head, Tyler. I mean, there's been a lot of great fucking video games. In terms of just the quality, in terms of the amount of time you spent and stuff. God, even like just dabbling little bits and stuff. Resident Evil 4 Remake, this was definitely one of the best games of the year. It would have placed higher on my list, but I needed to finish the entirety of the experience and of that sort. But anyway, from the game that I had initially played and stuff, it definitely feels better than the original game. And I felt that was fairly important in terms of my interest, because even when I played through the original game, I only played it through to a certain extent. I lost interest and then I went on to something else. For this game, I want to go back and play it. Finding the time to play it is definitely more difficult, but at the same time, this is a damn fantastic experience that was worthy enough to bypass the experiences that I had experienced, say, with Advance Wars, with freaking, like, the Pokemon DLC. I mean, okay, let's be honest, though, the Pokemon DLC probably would not have overtaken that either. You know, AEW Fight Forever, it definitely, Resident Evil 4, this thing was better than that. I mean, F-Zero 99, even though I put so much time and effort into that, you know, it's like, Resident Evil 4 Remake definitely made a lot more sense just to go into the number 6 position for me. So, yeah, that's number 6.
All right. Well, my number 6, Gables. Another sequel here. To one of 2018's best games.
Okay.
Spider-Man 2. I'm sorry. I'm contractually obligated to say Marvel Spider-Man 2.
Okay.
But anyways, wow. What's with the wow, Gables?
Well, I thought it was wow because it's not in your top 5.
Oh, okay. Wow, okay. This was a very judgmental wow is all. Anyways, I love Spider-Man 2018. It's like, it sucks, like this like, I should say it doesn't get the flowers it deserves because it's like one of the best-selling PlayStation games of all time. It's so weird to say. But it's like, so like when you look at 2018 and 2023, like both years were phenomenal for games. And like both years, it came away with like no awards or anything in the game awards.
Right.
But it's like, yeah, I don't know. But anyways, it just comes out in bad years, man. We're like, there's so much good shit. And like, I think in 2018, it was like 4th on my list. And then this is, I think Miles Morales was also like, I think in 2020 was like 5th on my list or something like that, maybe. But yeah, Spider-Man 2, it's just sometimes like what dings it. Sometimes it's just like, it's just a better version of the previous game, which I know was obviously like, duh, no fucking shit. But man, like sometimes he also dings it for that. Cause like, but I don't know. Anyways, in a world where we have so many bloated open world games that just go on for fucking ever, even one of the great ones where it's like, man, this feels like 20 hours too long. The fact that I was able to platinum this game in less than 30 hours fucking ruled.
Yeah.
And then like the fact that like the big complaint about Spider-Man 2018 was like, I really liked that game. I love that game. I found all the backpacks. I did a bunch of the side content. I like maxed out my level well before I finished the game. And I didn't even do all the side content, but like so much of that side content just was not fun. Like with the pigeons,
yeah,
or the fucking glass with the gas clouds and all that. Like that sucked. And then like the one with the content creator lady, that fucking annoyed the fuck out of me. And this game was like, like there's still a lot of content there, but it's like they did such a good job. Like it's not perfect. Like there's some that like, I didn't care for as others, but like they just did a great job of like making it matter more. They intertwined it a lot more into the main story. That kind of added more backstory and kind of, you know, and some stuff like totally like there's like I can't believe it, like how great some of the best boss fights and some of the best story progression of some of the side characters in this game are in the side content, and it's awesome. It's amazing. Like almost feels like it's a shame that they're in side content where people can miss them. Cause it's honestly better. Some of that side content is better than most games themselves. And like some of the shit they set up for, like, spoiler, there's gonna be a Spider-Man 3. Some of the shit they set up that are in that side content is gonna be fucking awesome. That's there. But like, I love the stuff with Venom, with Harry being back. The Mary Jane missions were actually pretty fun. And like, there's only a few of them. But they're like, when I eventually will do a new game plus for this, it won't be like Spider-Man where I tried replaying it earlier this year and I got to the first Mary Jane mission and I'm like, never mind. And I just stopped playing it because I'm like, as much as I love this game, I don't want to do these parts. And like, I was like, I got flashbacks to the Miles Morales mission and those. I'm like, those just weren't fun. And these were like, were actually fun. And like they added some gameplay elements to them. And it actually worked well and worked well with Mary Jane's narrative. And like, making her like part of the team as well. And like this game is about, it's Peter's story, but it's really about building Miles and like him finally, it's like him trying to become like, you know, he doesn't feel like Spider-Man. He doesn't feel like Peter Parker's sidekick. And it's like the story of like, and it's like Peter Parker dealing with like, you know, he's been Spider-Man for like about a decade at this point and him like dealing with like the fallout of like everything he's lost, everything that's happened, in the time frame between Spider-Man 1 and this, trying to go move, like progress in life, still trying to find a job basically because he can't keep a job because he's fucking Spider-Man. And then like, you know, and then also like I said, Miles like growing up, like trying to go to college, trying to become like, now he's becoming an adult. I just love that. Like it's about Peter. It's about Peter and what's going on in his life, but it's also like, but really it's Miles's, like it's Peter's story, but it's really about Miles. And I fucking love that. I love the way they integrated all that. Love where the story went. I would say like the one thing I didn't like is like the last like 3 hours of the main story, like where that went, like where the game went there, like in the gameplay parts, I didn't care for as much. I feel like the game kind of peaked at a certain moment and it maybe kind of went a couple hours too long, or maybe could have been tightened up a little bit, maybe been like a couple more missions instead of a whole other section. But I mean, it's the time, like that's it. That's the one nitpick I have for this game is like, yeah, like there's just too much good content. It's just too much good shit. But yeah, I mean, Spider-Man 2, it's such a phenomenal game. It just sucks. It keeps coming out. Like they keep putting this game out in great years. Next year, like next time, find a bad year, to do it in. But yeah, man, Spider-Man 2, once again, chef's kiss, beautiful game, gorgeous game. If you have a PlayStation, why the fuck do you own this game? But anyways, yeah, that's my number six, Gables. That is going to be it for part one, actually. So already. Yeah. So if you guys like this, we'll be back next week for you guys. Next week for you guys, it's a few minutes for us. But if you like all that, you want to keep, yeah, hey, like you're enjoying this, you want to get your reminder when the next one comes out, like, follow, subscribe, look for us on podcast services. Just look for us, Drunk Nerds, YouTube. Just, hey, like, follow, subscribe, click that bell as well. Because I've really been pushing that YouTube service. So I really appreciate it if you help us out there, throw us a bone, you know, share with your friends. More importantly, probably the most important thing you do is shares, tell other people about us, you know, share it to your friends, tell your friends about it. You know, share it to your Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever social media platform out there. I don't know about, Threads. I don't fucking know. Yeah, do all that for us. Really, really appreciate it. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter as well. But yeah, actually before we get out of here, I'll do a quick, little rerun here of our, top 10 games. Gables number 10, Advance Wars, Reboot Camp number 9. AW Fight Forever, number 8, Teal Mask and Indigo Disc, right? From Pokemon, yep. Scarlet Violet. Yep. Yeah, okay. Number 7, F-099, and number 6, Resident Evil 4 Remake. My number 10, Cocoon. Excuse me, sorry. Number 9, Dead Space. Number 8, Wolong Fallen Dynasty. Number 7, Alan Wake 2. And number 6, Spider-Man 2. So, yeah. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week with part 2. But I was your host, I was Tyler.
I'm a Colonel Gables. Until next time. Look forward to listening to another fun-filled episode of the Drunk-Nerds Podcast.
Hey, Gables.
Yeah.
Too sweet?
Too sweet, man.
Bye, guys.
See ya.